This is Abby Gancharski, and I want to start by saying hello, good afternoon, and welcome. Today I'm going to be talking about Arizona's new paid sick leave law, and we'll start by taking a look at the law itself and its requirements, focusing on some of the requirements that present specific challenges for employers. I'm going to borrow from one of the attendees. She commented to me this morning that she thought that the law was going to be easier than it is, and I think that that is an apt description of the title of the act and what I should have called today's webinar, that this is definitely one of those situations that a law that should be straightforward, both for employees and businesses to implement and follow, has a lot of potential pitfalls for employers. So I'm glad that you're here today. It'll give you a few months to start thinking about how you want to implement this law for your specific business, how it's really going to make sense for you and the business and your employees. If you have any questions as I'm talking, please feel free to use the chat function. You can message me privately, or you can message everyone with your questions. For those who did provide questions to me when you registered, I have done everything I can to incorporate them into the presentation. Keep in mind that this isn't legal advice, this isn't an attorney-client relationship, but it is information based upon the law. And of course, if anybody has any legal questions that you'd like to discuss with me afterwards, I'm certainly open to that. The webinar program should have automatically muted you when you entered the session, and I did that because we want to keep the noise levels as minimal as possible. But I know that some of you may want to voice your questions instead of sending them via chat. That's perfectly fine. Just go ahead and either use the chat function or unmute yourself and ask questions as we go. My goal, as always, is to make sure that you get all of the information that you need as we go through. So what we're talking about today is the law that was passed by Arizona voters in November of 2016. It was called the Minimum Wage and Paid Sick Time Off Initiative, but we'll be calling it Proposition 206. That's what it was named on the ballot. And it's now called the Fair Wages and Healthy Families Act. That act required a minimum wage increase, beginning with the increase to $10 an hour that you're all familiar with, because that took effect in January of 2017, and we've seen the impacts that is already having on businesses throughout the state. And now we are focused on the requirement that all Arizona employers, other than the federal or state government, need to provide employees with paid sick time, we'll be calling that PST, as of July 1st, 2017. So, given the complications and just the additional requirement, it is my recommendation that businesses start to think about that now. Beginning of March, it'll give you a few months. In addition to, we know that there are some lawsuits and challenges pending, but my best guess at this point, based on everything I'm seeing, is that the PST requirements probably will take effect in July. Possibly famous last words, but I know many of you and your businesses, it makes a lot more sense to put in the work now and make sure that you're ready for a law that takes effect in July rather than getting caught in June and not having enough time to prepare. The act does apply to all employers. In the minimum wage context, the Arizona law actually excluded small businesses from the definition and thus from the minimum wage requirements. But the definition of employer is different in the earned paid sick time context, and there isn't any exemption for small businesses. So for the person who asked if this includes household employers, it does. It also includes employers who are based in or have operations outside of the state of Arizona, but who have employees who are in Arizona. It does apply to you as well. So we have the benefits for employees, but we definitely have the challenges for the employers. Let me take a moment and introduce myself. I've met many of you on the call, but I haven't met everybody. So if you'll allow me a few minutes to just thank you for joining me today and introduce myself briefly. My name is Abby Gancharski, and I've been an employment lawyer based in Tucson for going on 14 years now. My practice is focused primarily on representing businesses and employers in all aspects of their employment-related needs. Building upon that, I recently spent 2 years as the Vice President for Human Resources and Associate Counsel for a large national business based in Tucson. I have responsibility for right around 6,000 employees spread across 20 states, and I got to learn all about the ins and outs of business and the challenges that come with implementing laws like Arizona's new paid sick leave law, and how you reconcile between different laws when you're operating in different states, and the challenges when we're talking about the financial impact of a law like this. So I am very attuned to all of those things. I am thrilled to be able to expand upon those experiences today talking to you. And I thank you for all the questions that you provided me in advance. As I said before, I have incorporated them into the presentation and I'll talk about them as I go through. But I also encourage you to use the chat function as you have questions that come up, because I do have three goals today. First is to help you understand the law. Second is to help you evaluate your existing policies and where you need to make revisions to comply with the law. And the third, and perhaps most important, is to help you to identify ways to minimize the financial burden to your company while maximizing the benefits to your employee, and as a result, raising your employee morale or keeping it at the high levels it's already at. I want to give you the tools to do that. And so that's where we're going to focus. For those who joined us a little late, your microphone should have been muted when you entered today's session to keep the background noise down. Feel free to unmute it if you have any questions, but you can also use the chat feature that you'll see on your screen. If it's not popping up for you, just hit Alt-H and it should show up there for you. So we'll start with the basics of the law. The PST accrual, employees can begin accruing PST at the commencement of employment or July 1st of this year, whichever is later, and that's going to be calculated based upon their hours worked. The Act counts everybody performing work for compensation as an employee. That means anyone who's full-time, anyone who's part-time, anyone who's temporary or seasonal, everybody gets PST for purposes of determining how many employees an employer has. The employer has 15 or more employees. If you had 15 or more employees on payroll for some portion of a day in each of 20 different calendar weeks in the current or the preceding year, and those weeks don't even have to be consecutive. So we are going with a very broad definition of, did you have 15 or more employees? For employers with 15 or more employees, the employee must accrue a minimum of 1 hour of PST for every 30 hours worked. You are not entitled to accrue or use more than 40 hours of PST per year based upon the law, but the employer can always elect to allow more accrual of PST if you want to. Same sort of process if you have less than 15 employees, but instead of accruing an hour for up to 40 hours of PST, you'll accrue up to 24 hours of PST. For these purposes, exempt employees are presumed to work 40 hours per week, unless you can demonstrate that their regular schedule is something less than that, and then you can prorate their PST. If you want, you can also use the PST to reduce available PTO, but the law is pretty clear that that means if it's allowed by your PTO policy. So if as an employer you want to do that, I strongly recommend you go back into your PTO policy and make some revisions there too to discuss the relationship between your PTO and your PST. I had a question as far as when we start the benefit of accruing PTO, and I'm reading that to mean actually PST. Really, it's up to the employer. You have to start accruing by July 1st. If you have employees already and you just want to get started with this and get the process going, and quite frankly, start having them exhaust the PST, then you may elect to start this sooner than July 1st. The issue is that by July 1st, you need to have all of your processes in place and you need to have all of your employees starting to accrue. Okay. The question also went on to include, what about employees who are not in good standing? This law does not reflect whether the employee is in good standing or not. The only caveat that it provides in that regard is that if you hire somebody on or after July 1st, you can start accruing PST for them that day, but you can decline to give them access to use the PST until 90 days after their employment began. I see that we have another question, is that, does this mean that the max an employer has to honor each year is 40 hours? And yes, that's the reading that the Industrial Commission appears to be taking of the law, that the max an employer has to honor is 40 hours. You can allow employees to use more PST if you want to. But all employees, temporary, anybody who's paid needs to accrue PST. As far as how the law defines a year, that's up to you as the employer. The law is not setting a specific year. It's up to you. I have some clients who are electing to do it based on the calendar year. I have other companies that are looking at doing it based on anniversaries, and then still others who are running it based upon whatever their benefits plans are. So if you are in an off benefits plan, if you run from June 1st until May 31st, you may look at having the PST year run consecutive with that. If you have on-call employees, and I've had several questions about that, the on-call employees, I would accrue the PST based upon that specific 30 hours worked. So going back to what I was saying before, if you have an employee who is working on-call, that you need to accrue 1 hour of earned PST for every 30 hours worked. Okay? All right. Looks like I'm getting pretty close to covering it. And again, these rules do appear to apply to everybody. For example, home health workers, staffing companies. I know this is going to be a huge discussion for companies who are placing employees where there isn't a set schedule. And I do think that it's going to have a financial impact on the consumer as well as the company who's placing the individuals, because you're going to have to be able to address the profit margin somehow. Likewise, same answer as far as substitute teachers and coaches who don't use a time clock. I'd take a look at their regular schedule, and if they are working 40 hours per week, give or take, I would accrue the PST based upon that. If you have any questions about that, of course, talk with your legal counsel. If you don't have counsel, I am certainly available and happy to talk with you if you have any questions or if I can assist with anything. There's four reasons that the law requires that you allow use of PST. They are the employee's own mental or physical illness, injury, health condition, everything that you're used to as far as what that would encompass. Second, if an employee needs to care for a family member with mental or physical illness, etc. What it adds to where I see most sick leave policies focusing right now is that it adds an employee's absences that are necessary due to certain domestic violence, sexual violence, abuse, or stalking. Certain business closures also due to public health emergencies. Those aren't things that I often see in PTO policies or in other sick leave or leave-related policies. So if you are deciding to use your existing PTO policy and incorporate PST into that, make sure you go into the PTO policy and you add in especially numbers 3 and 4. And then the law is clear too that you can allow the use of PST for other reasons. These are the four for which you need to allow the PST. And in answer to the question about whether you'll get a copy of my slideshow, absolutely. I want you to be able to focus on asking questions and internalizing as much as you can. But my goal today, again, is to make sure that you have all of the information that you need in order to be able to move forward. I truly believe that this should have been a reasonably straightforward process to implement for employers, but it's just not as simple as it seems it should have been. So I was asked if the standards for someone using PST are different than using standard PTO. And really the question for that is going to be a question up to the employer of how do you want it to work for you? How do you want to implement it? Likewise, how do you want to relate it to your PTO policy that includes all time off? And we'll talk in a little bit as I talk about some of the challenges about why you may not want to incorporate this into a larger PTO policy. There's some specific requirements as far as anti-retaliation and no use of PST-related time for disciplinary purposes that may end up meaning that you don't want to just build this into your existing broader PTO policy. I was also asked about how this relates with ADA and FMLA. And again, I think that's an employer-based question. I think that it's going to be a question of how your company is going to want to handle this and how it makes sense to you. I would definitely look at saying that you need to exhaust not only your PTO, but also your PST while you're on FMLA, assuming that it meets the reasons. And I struggle with where you would be taking FMLA, but you would not be eligible to use PST. I can't come up with any examples of that just yet. But knowing you all and knowing your employees, someone in the next year or two will come up with something that will take me by surprise and give me the example that I need there. So documenting the reasons for PST usage. This is where we start to get into some of the challenges. If an employee uses PST on 3 or more consecutive workdays, you as the employer may request a number of types of documentation. And they're called out in the law. I didn't include them all here, but they include what you would really sort of expect as far as the reasons you can use PST. A doctor's note for the medical condition, a signed statement from the employee or an attorney for some of the other reasons, or even a police report or a protective order. I would approach this along the lines of how you approach the I-9 backup documentation. I would say, here are the different documentation types that you could provide to me to back up your use of PST. It is up to you, my dear employee, as to what type of information you're going to give me. Because employers may not require that employees disclose the details about their own or a family member's health condition or details of the domestic violence, sexual violence, abuse, stalking, anything along those lines. And of course, we can all understand that, right? As employers, I don't know that you want to know any of that, and particularly because it will then put you on notice as far as it, and it may create more obstacles for you and more burdens for you. But I would use this as much as you can to address the, as it was posed to me, bogus sick call-ins, where as long as the employee has used PST on at least 3 consecutive workdays, you can request the documentation. More so, because of the different reasons associated with the protection of the use, you may want to allow the employees to exhaust their PST in order to be able to get that bucket taken care of and be able to go back to operating the way that you normally do. All right, I don't see any new questions. So moving into paying for PST usage, which I know is one of the big questions for all of you. Employers must permit employees to use PST and then pay them for that use in the smaller of, and this is where the challenges start, an hourly increment, but if your payroll system allows a smaller increment for absence accounting and other time, then you have to allow that smaller increment. And so for many of you, I expect that this is going to be around a tenth of an hour where you're rounding time based upon the time clock, but you're allowing use of absence-related time to the tenth of an hour. That means you're going to have to allow the use of PST to the tenth of an hour. And you can see how that means that then you could have an employee who is tardy regularly and tells you that their tardiness is related to a medical condition, sort of along the same lines as what we see within the intermittent FMLA. I have migraines, and so I took medication last night. It made me late this morning, and I need to use my PST for that. This is where having a very clear policy is going to be to your benefit. It's also where you're going to need to do a decent amount of upfront training with your managers, and then you're definitely going to want to do continual training with your managers to make sure that they're understanding what the requirements are, that they appreciate the challenges that we face, and that they're doing everything that they can to minimize any legal risks associated with an employee's use of PST. I think that this is where consulting with your employment counsel now and continuing to consult with them as you see how your employees really are using PST is going to help, because my guess is you'll be refining the PST process and the PTO process over the next couple of years. I was asked if there's a specific amount of time that an exempt employee must miss in a workday to require them to use the sick time. The law doesn't specify that, but it does say that the exempt employees get to accrue a certain amount of time. So you can take a look at that and see how you want to handle it. Obviously, we don't want to get into a situation where your exempt employees are now tracking all of their time, and that'll create a question mark as to whether you really consider them exempt or not. see that we have a question too about stopping the accrual after it reaches the 40 hours in 1 year. And yes, you can max the accrual at 40 hours in 1 year. Proposition 206, interestingly, did not address how employers should pay PST for employees with variable wages. And we haven't seen anything from the Industrial Commission changing any of that. What we do have is the Industrial Commission's recommendation that you pay an hourly wage rate based on the actual wages the employee would have been paid, if you know that, for the period of time in which they use the sick time, or average the hourly rate for the wages that you paid during the preceding 90 days and use that for the PST that you would pay to an employee with variable wages. That's not going to apply to everybody, but if you do have employees who either work in different roles and therefore receive different pay, or have shift differentials or something along those lines, definitely something you're going to want to put into your written policy so that you have that going forward and everyone can quite literally be on the same page. If you hire a new employee and you now do not offer PTO to be used until after 90 days, you can do this, yep, absolutely, with PST as well, and y'all can see that question. All right, so carry forward. Talked a little bit about the maximum that you can accrue. Now we talk about what happens when you get to that limit. What the law says is that employees may carry forward their earned PST to the following year, unless the employer says that you can't. You can avoid having to roll over if you pay out the earned PST at the end of the year and then grant the full allotment of PST for the following year. My takeaway from this is that I do not expect many employers to be paying out. Where I think an employer will want to pay out would be an employer who knows every year we're going to be facing pay increases. So if you have a significant portion of your population who's subject to those minimum wage increases that fall under the other part of this act, you may want to avoid the rollover and pay out based upon the current pay, because otherwise you're going to be paying accrued PTSD at that higher rate when it's finally taken, right? The same thing that you experience with PTO, where somebody starts as the frontline employee making minimum wage and saves all of their PTO, and 25 years later is your CEO, and then they start taking PTO. That is a significant hit to your bottom line. Same thing here. So if you have employees where you're going to see them get into circumstances that they start banking a lot of time and end up using it when they're paid at a higher hourly rate, you may be financially better off to start paying it out. Okay. And the other option too, somebody asked about putting PST into the PTO bank. As far as the law is written, I don't know that you can do that. I think that it would be an interesting approach. I think that then it becomes a question mark of whether that counts as a payout and whether your PTO would be paid out at separation. PST actually does not need to be paid out at separation. So this carry forward rule where you can avoid the rollover if you elect to pay it out puts an additional burden on employers from my perspective, and I don't know that it's something that's going to be elected by a lot of employers. All right, protection of the PST usage. Employers may not count the use of PST as an absence that leads to discipline or termination, which is huge, right? This is the biggest challenge, I think, for everybody. You cannot count the use of PST as an absence that leads to discipline or termination. You also cannot retaliate against your employees for using or seeking to use PST. In fact, the Act specifically states it's unlawful for your absenteeism policy to count PST as an absence that may lead to or result in discipline, discharge, demotion, suspension, or any other adverse action. This in and of itself, I think, is the biggest challenge that you are all going to face putting this policy into practice, because it means that you now have employees who have up to 40 hours of PST and you aren't able to discipline them for using their PST. What I see with the parallel laws in other states, most notably California, is that you may have the ability to discipline certain of your employees, not for the use of PST. I would never tell you to discipline for use of PST. That is a direct violation of the law. But what you'll want to work on with your legal counsel as it is appropriate is whether the way the employee is using PST, because the law says that employees need to do it in the way that is least disruptive to the employer whenever possible. The way the employee is using it, is it negatively affecting your business? So for example, if you have a receptionist whose job is to open the office and get everything ready and answer the phone starting at 8 a.m. when the phone lines start to ring, and you don't have backup for that person, and you don't have anything, and if that person is not there, the phones go unanswered, that could be disruptive to your business. And of course, if it happens one case, we all understand that certain things happen. But if it becomes a routine issue, that may have significant business consequences for you, where you're not necessarily disciplining for the use of PST, but you're disciplining for the way the employee is handling their need to take the PST. And I can see in my head all of your faces rolling your eyes and saying, Abby, that is a very fine line that you are walking. And I would say, absolutely it is. And that's where I strongly recommend that you work with counsel as you get into those situations. Because I also know that the flip side is, a lot of employees, you cannot allow them to just use 40 hours without addressing the absences. If they're unforeseeable absences that create a significant business impact, you're going to need to address them in one way, shape, or form. And you'll want to do that in a way that doesn't immediately trigger a violation of the new act, because nobody wants that, right? That's why you're all here with me today. Okay? So what I recommend is that you start to create your PST policy and process now. What you'll want to do is clearly start to explain your employees' rights to PST under the new Arizona statute and go through what the company's process is going to be. All of the different question marks I've already raised in your head, those should be conversations you have over the next several weeks and months with your business leaders, talking about what we're going to do, how we're going to do that, how it all gets incorporated together. In the policy, you want to explain the company's PST process. What are you going to do? What is required for notice? How does somebody let you know that they need to do something? You cannot require somebody to find their own coverage. You can't require them even to look for their own coverage if they're going to take PST. So for those of you who have that provision in your PTO policies, it isn't transferable here. Go ahead and confirm too that your PST records are going to be maintained for 4 years. Separately, you'll want to make sure that you identify who is responsible ultimately for making sure of that. And that might be part of your PST policy that you circulate to your employees, or you might put it into your document retention policy. I'm pretty sure you can tell that where I'm heading with all of this is that this is a really great opportunity, if you haven't recently, to take a look at your employee handbook, to take a look at all of your employee-related policies and make sure that they're all in keeping with not only what you're actually doing right now, but with what makes sense for you to be doing as a company right now. And of course, if you need a consultant or if you need outside legal counsel, definitely reach out to those folks. I'm here. I know there's a whole lot of HR professionals and other employment counsel in town. Certainly not seeking to intrude on your existing relationships, but if I can be of any help, just let me know. And then you'll want to talk to your provider of your payroll systems and make sure that you are set up to report the PST balance every payday. The law gives you two approaches to that. You can either put it on the pay stub or you can do it on a report that you'll circulate with the pay stubs, telling people the amount of PST available, the amount of PST that's been taken to date, and the dollar amount of the PST that's been paid the year to date. And then just make sure that you get that policy out before July 1st. I'm sure there's some of you who are saying, you know what, this is way too complicated, so I'm just going to ignore it for right now. That is, as you know, a business decision that you can take, but I want you to know there are potential penalties for non-compliance in the form of civil lawsuits and administrative complaints, and there's some significant remedies that are available. The employee could receive the wages that are owed or twice the underpaid wages. There could be fines of a minimum of $150 a day if there was retaliation. For record keeping violations, at least $250 the first time and at least $1,000 for each subsequent or willful violation, and then any other legal or equitable relief. In addition, just so you know, if you're not maintaining the required records, either you don't keep them or you don't keep them for the requisite 4 years, the court has the ability, or the administrative agency if you've gone that route, to presume that you didn't pay the required minimum wage or earn paid sick time. So definitely things to keep in mind. And then, of course, your policy, like always, is just the beginning, because if you don't train your managers on the policy and how to follow it, then we're not going to get to where we need to be. The other requirement of the act is that you post a required notice, and the Industrial Commission has released their drafts of those. So I've given you the links both for the English notice and Spanish notice, and then make sure that you follow the policy. I would also go ahead now, because of all of these challenges, and calendar when you're going to come back and take a look at your policy, because there are so many questions about this, and I do expect that the Industrial Commission will need to keep answering questions as we go forward with implementation, that you'll want to review the policy at regular intervals to make sure that you remain in compliance, and then that any changes that have been made from the Industrial Commission's perspective, that you're incorporating those. So I've talked for a while, and I've addressed a lot of the questions that I've seen coming through in the chat. But I do want to make sure that I get to as many questions as I can within the time that we have together before you get back to your regularly scheduled jobs. So I see the question is as far as accrual of how many hours should be accruing per pay period. And yes, you need to be accruing. Actually, the accrual is based upon the 30 hours. And so you want to make sure that you're accruing properly. What I see several employers doing, especially with employees who are exempt, is saying, you know what, this is going to be our calendar year for PST purposes, and here are your 5 days, and not even worry about the accrual, but just give them the bulk of the 5 days up front. You know that it's there, they know that it's there, and then they can exhaust things going forward. That also helps with businesses where there's business fluctuations for the hourly employees, that if you want to allow the use of PST to cover weeks in which they don't get to work as many hours as they were scheduled, you can start to help them to use their PST in a way that benefits them. The question is, if someone quits or is laid off or fired, is there any remaining PST payable? The Act doesn't require that you need to pay out PST at separation. Interestingly, though, the Act does require that if somebody comes back to work for you in 9 months, you have to reinstate their balance as it was at the time of their departure. So make sure that you keep those records, especially if you have those boomerang employees who leave you for 25 cents to go work somewhere else and then come back to you because you're in a position to be able to offer them a little bit more money, something along those lines. Make sure that you're keeping the records for compliance purposes and also for that. Question is, can the employees try to use this for childcare when they don't have anyone to stay home with the children, but the children aren't sick? That's going to be a question of how you formulate your policy and if you want them to be able to use it for that or not. And then the last question that I'm seeing right now is that contractors are not the employer's employees, but the staffing company's employees, and who's required to pay PST. The employer is required to pay the PST, but it's going to ultimately come down to your contractual agreement with your staffing company and how that works. I have to assume that for many staffing relationships, joint employer relationships, even independent contractor relationships, I think those relationships are all going to see some financial consideration of this act in some fashion, because at the end of the day, somebody's going to have to pay for the PST. And then the final notice for employees, I gave you those links. When I send you the PowerPoint, I'll make sure that they're in there so that you can get to it. That's the notice. If you're ready to go ahead and get started, you can post the notice. You don't have to have the notice up just yet because the act hasn't taken effect yet. I know that we are running short on time. I am happy to keep going as I see that there's a whole lot of questions still. Keep in mind, again, I'm not your legal counsel at this point. We don't have an attorney-client relationship, but I'm happy to continue to answer the questions based upon my understanding of the law. And I know that some of you will need to depart soon, and others, I hope you'll stay with me for a little while, and I'll get as many questions as I can answered. Thank you so much for joining me today. And let's see. All right. So question is, if we elect to have the starting point at the beginning of the year, as of 7/1, how many hours would they have already accrued? If it's at the beginning of the year, in this year you have two options. You can either prorate it, or you can give them the 5 days, the 40 hours. It really depends on taking a look at what makes the most sense and then maxing it out. Keep in mind that as you go forward, they will accrue the 40 hours. What you may find is that because you give them the 40 hours retroactive to January, you actually have some absences that you can consider to have used the PST and then start to exhaust that bank as well. And as you can tell, I think that it is to employers' benefits to start using those banks because you can get employees the benefits and you can avoid the potential claim of disciplinary retaliation for use of PST. I do not see anything in the regulations that talks about hiring of a nanny that the nanny would not be subject to PST. The Act is very specific as to employers, both as regard minimum wage and as regards PST. In the minimum wage context, the Act excludes small businesses from the definition, but in the PST context, there is currently no exemption for a small business. It's any corporation, proprietorship, partnership, joint venture, LLC, trust, whole bunch of others, including individuals or another entity acting directly or indirectly in the interest of an employer in relation to an employee. I would argue, I think that is intended to cover domestic employees, such as a nanny. You do, again, only need to calculate your hours worked from July 1st if you want to do that, if it makes sense to do that. If you are really close to the end of your calendar year as far as what your benefits are, it may make sense to approach it from that perspective. It really is going to be a decision of the company. If you call one of several substitute teachers and they say sick, do you have to pay PST to the sub who said that they were sick? That's going to be a question of how you provide for use of PST in your policy. Whether it's the employee's decision as to whether to use the PST or whether it's the company's decision to use PST or whether it's both. So something definitely to look at in your policy development and what you want the employees to be providing you as you go forward. So when someone separates, we don't pay out the PST and they return, we reinstate the balance. If the rehire date is now in a new year, is the reinstated balance considered part of their new accrual? It is not, as I'm reading the interpretations of the law right now. Really what it is they don't want employers to, as I read it, be in the perspective of saying, you know what, let's go ahead and separate all of our employees at the end of this year, not have to pay anything out, and then bring them back with no balance. They want the employees to have the access to the PST to be able to use it going forward. Rather than including the PST info on the pay stub, can we include the information on the employee's personal information on the intranet? I would definitely lock that down, and I think you're contemplating that, Audrey. But I would take a look at it from the perspective of encouraging the employee to check it on a per pay period basis, or at least reminding them that they have access to it, because the requirement is that you need to be providing it to them on that per pay period basis. So if they have access into their specific portal and they can check their balance, maybe it's a note that you put on the pay stub every now and then, hey, reminder, this is how you can access it, or an email that circulates or some other notice saying it's not on your pay stub, this is where it's available to you. What you'll want is to be able to prove to the agencies if they show up that, yes, I was communicating that. We were aware of our obligations, we were certainly following them. If PST is accrued and not given all up front, can an employer allow use of PST into a negative balance up to the amount that they would accrue over the year, or can the employee only use the PST they've accrued up to that point? Great question, Tanya. You can decide as a company to say, we will allow you to borrow. You can also let them borrow PST from your PTO balances if you decide to take that route, if PTO gives them more time off than PST requires. You can certainly set up balances. The thing to keep in mind is that if you have an exempt employee or a minimum wage employee who leaves with a negative balance, you can't deduct from that final paycheck because that'll get you into trouble with the FLSA and other wage and hour laws. So keep an eye on that. And then it looks like our last question is that there's a company currently with a vacation accrual and PTO accrual, and could you just change how PTO is calculated? Certainly something that you can look at doing, absolutely. It depends on a whole lot of factors. So in working with your HR professionals, business leaders, and hopefully outside counsel, you just want to take a look at it and make sure that it works for your business purposes, and that you're calculating it properly. So if there are no further questions, I know I spoke a little bit fast at the end to see if I can get all of those questions answered. I'll wait just a minute to see if anybody else has any questions. And if not, I will thank you again very much for attending today. I will be sending out a follow-up with the slides and then just to get your feedback on today's webinar and any subjects you'd like to talk about further. Certainly happy to help you if there's anything I can be doing to help support you in developing your PST policy or any other policies and procedures that will benefit your company and its employees. And I very much look forward to our next webinar and to talking with all of you again. Have a great day, and thank you again. Take care.